All right, welcome everybody. I call to order the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting Wednesday, March 4th, 2026 at 6:05 p.m. We'll start with a roll call, please.
Director Linda Austin.
Here.
Director Cassie D.
Here.
Director Karen Ray Ressam.
Here.
All right, thank you. We'll now do the Pledge of Allegiance. Please join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sorry, I'm so used to I was looking for the kid, and I'm like, wait, go home.
Okay, now we'll go on to the agenda review. Does anybody have any board members want to make any changes or move anything?
Nope.
No? Okay. Moving right along to public comments on items not appearing on the agenda, I will open up for public comment. Seeing nobody come forward, I will close public comment. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Board members, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay, well then I will open up public comment for the consent agenda. Seeing nobody come forward, I will close public comment for the consent agenda and bring it back to the board for approval.
Madam Chair, I'll move that we approve the consent agenda as published.
We have a motion. Can I have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. May I have a roll call, please?
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Director Cassie D?
Yes.
Director Karen Ray Ressam?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay. Now on to our action items. Item 6A, the announcement of rotation of chair and vice chair for the 2026 calendar year.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, district administrator. The item before you is our annual rotation of the chair. And with that, typically this would be conducted at our February meeting, but since we had that meeting canceled, we are conducting it now at the March meeting. And so by our bylaws, the rotation goes that the person that was sitting as chair moves down to vice chair. It's a reverse rotation. It's a kind of a past president's type role. And so on the screen, you can see that currently Cassie D was the chairperson. And as of this evening's meeting, it will become Karen Ray Ressam of Arroyo Grande, with Cassie D becoming the vice chair and Linda Austin rotating to the director position. With that, that concludes my presentation, and congratulations on your rotation.
Thank you so much. Board members, do you have any questions?
No.
Nope.
No. Do I have to open up for public comment on this item? All right, let's open up public comment on this item. Seeing nobody come forward, I will close public comment on this item and bring it back to the board to switch our chairs. Thank you.
Hello, Miss Linda.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
You too.
All right, everyone. That moves us to item 6B. This is presentation and approval of fiscal year ending June 2025 financial audit. Mr. Gent.
Good evening. The item before you is a presentation and approval of the fiscal year ending June 25 for the 24-25 fiscal years and our financial audit. We have our auditor on the phone with us. That was a last-minute substitution. We had actually expected him to be here in person, but Chris Padilla is on the line, and we think we have the volumes worked out where he will be given a presentation, and we've attempted to incorporate his slides into our presentation, and we'll be moving the slides along on his behalf. So with that, I'll turn it over to Chris. Chris, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Thanks.
All right. As Jerry mentioned, this is sorry, I can hear my voice in the background.
Okay.
All right. We'll go ahead and get started. So the audit of the financial statements was a clean, unmodified opinion. No new accounting policies were adopted in the current year.
Time out, please. We're having some technical difficulties. Hang on just a second. Can you speak one more time and just kind of, just a couple words?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay, they're still working on it. Oof. Can you try one more time?
Yeah, can check.
Again, they're still working on it. Thank you for your patience.
No problem.
Can you try again?
Yeah, can you hear me?
It's getting a little better. Can you do it again?
Yeah.
There we go. It's getting better.
All right.
One more time?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, that's much better. Thank you, Chris. All right, go ahead. Thank you very much for working with us on that.
Yeah, not a problem. Okay, we'll just start from the top. So as we mentioned, audit opinion was a clean, unmodified opinion. No new accounting policies were adopted in the current year. There are no difficulties in performing the audit. There are no disagreements with management. And there were no corrected or uncorrected misstatements. The only adjustments were related to adjusting journal entries that we consider post-closing entries that we assist management with the posting. And last thing, we did not consult with any other accounts or outside third parties. So next is certain accounting estimates are considered significant. We evaluated the following estimates and found them to be reasonable in relation to the financial statements taken as a whole. These include useful lives depreciation, net pension liability, and OPEB liability. And moving on to the next slide. The key financial statement disclosures include Note 3, depreciation. Note 7, net pension liability. And note 8, OPEB liability. And then in the slides is a summary of the assumptions utilized in each of those significant estimates. And then limited procedures, including inquiries and consistency checks, were applied to the following RSI. Management discussed an analysis schedule of proportionate share of net pension liability, schedule of pension contributions, schedule of changes in OPEB liability and related ratios, and schedule of OPEB contributions. Again, no opinion or assurance is expressed on RSI information. One thing I wanted to point out in this year's audit was a note 4, settlement receivable. And this essentially has to do with the redundancy project and the rehabilitation of the project. So it was completed in fiscal year 2025. However, the settlement payment wasn't received until July of 2025. We elected to receive that in 2025 fiscal year by recognizing the settlement receivable and capturing that in revenue in the current year. So you can see that in other revenue. Again, there is no effect on the statement of activities as there is a redundancy expense in the same amount. The expenses related to construction in progress, deletions for other amounts reversed. And that concludes my slides. Any questions?
All right, let's check with the board. Linda, any questions?
No, I have no questions.
See any questions? All right, no questions from the board. We'll go ahead and open up public comment. And seeing no public comment, we'll close public comment, bring this back to the board. And this is just a receive. You do not need a vote on this, do you?
That's fine.
Okay, great. So that's a receive and file. Thank you very much. Do we have comments?
Well, yeah, I like to say great job. Really.
I was going to say, I always look for two words, clean, unmodified. Yeah. That's the rest of that. So thank you for that, staff. All right, so we will move forward to item 6C. This is our digester gas cogeneration project board update. Again, Mr. Gent.
Yeah, good evening, board. The item before you is, as we've talked about over the past years, we've given minor updates. The digester gas cogeneration project board update that I've owed you for some time. And so the recommendation tonight is several options that I would like your board to consider. So you can direct me to advance the project into final plans, or direct me to abandon the project, or provide other direction. And that'll make more sense as we move through some of the highlights of the project. So on the background side, so previously the district did have a cogeneration system. In 2009, the district had procured and installed a cogeneration system. That system was intended to use the excess biogas at the plant to generate electricity and provide the heat needed for anaerobic digesters. While that system initially provided at least a portion of the intended results, it was never fully functional and suffered several system failures. Following investigations by district staff and qualified independent engineers, the following is a summary of the factors that contributed to poor performance and ultimate system failure. So one of the first main issues to talk about is inadequate gas treatment. So the combustion of siloxanes, that's a mineral that's present in biogas. So combustion of siloxanes, water, and other biogas constituents led to compromised performance, reduced energy output, and eventually engine failure. So siloxanes end up turning to a glass-like substance in the combustion chamber of, like, basically a car engine, right? So if you have glass in your car engine, it's going to cause premature wear and failure. And then there was ineffective heat management, excessive temperatures for intake, fuel, air, engine, and potentially exhaust due to system fouling contributed to poor performance and other premature failure. And then misconfigured equipment. The system was made up of various components independently designed and manufactured and then pieced together on site to create a solution. Specifically, when the system included the installation of a 10-year-old motor represented as new, which was undersized for the intended output. This method of construction resulted in an installed system that was very difficult to commission, optimize, and troubleshoot, and almost certainly ensured the system would not perform as expected. This method also meant that no single manufacturer was responsible for the system's performance. So then, additionally, excessive maintenance and premature failure, among other system deficiencies, high intake temperature, and siloxane breakthrough were identified as primary contributors to high maintenance requirements, poor performance, and the premature failure. So I wanted to talk about that because that does highlight some of the issues with running some of these type of systems. And so in my staff report, I'd go on to say it should be noted that neither the performance nor training level of plant staff were identified as contributing to factors to system failure. Unfortunately, these issues were not unique and plagued many wastewater agencies who were early adopters of cogeneration systems. Following review of the situation by cogeneration specialists, Southland and our consultant and PG&E, they all concur with the findings having been outlined above. So this is a consideration. You know, these systems have to be maintained. And that was really the onset of this study was, can we restart this system that we already have? And that's what led to the investigation that has moved along. And basically, it's a full system replacement rather than any repair or augmentation to the existing system. So that's what I'm leading into the 2023 investigation. The results of a complementary preliminary energy assessment had indicated that a new cogeneration system was viable and would provide economic and environmental value to the district. Upon direction of the board at the May 3rd, 2023 meeting, $163,000 was appropriated for the district and Southland Industries to fully investigate the feasibility and complete an investment grade audit. And that's defined below. It's a highly detailed feasibility study that pays attention to all of the finances involved in delivering such a project. So an investment grade audit of utilizing a cogeneration system at the wastewater plant. Currently, we purchase all our energy for operations at the treatment plant from local serving utilities, the electricity from PG&E and natural gas from SoCalGas. The energy is consumed by the plant to power various treatment systems and maintain appropriate operating temperatures for the digesters. Currently, all digester biogas produced from treatment plant process is burned through a biogas flare and provides no heat or power for operations. Based on the initial preliminary evaluation conducted in 2023, it was estimated that appropriately designed system could offset in excess of 80% of the plant's electricity needs and over 90% of our gas consumption. This preliminary evaluation has been confirmed and updated using current, and you'll see that in our Southland's presentation that I'm going to hand off to here in a moment. Through this IGA feasibility study, the district and Southland have developed a 180-kilowatt cogeneration project that would beneficially use the digester biogas for the on-site production of electricity and heat for use for the plant operations. And with that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Brent Patera from Southland. He's going to run through a full project update and the status and explain how the project and process will work.
Thank you, Jeremy. Can you hear me okay? Madam Chair and members of the board, thank you for the time and the opportunity to present this important project. As Jeremy said, my name is Brent Patera. I'm a business development manager at Southland Industries, ably assisted by Jeff Schaller. Jeff runs all of our client engagements on the West Coast. So between the two of us, we're hoping to be able to answer any questions that you may have. My intention is to introduce you to the system at the appropriate level of detail so that you understand what we're doing without, you know, diving deep into the weeds. This meeting has been the quickest meeting I've ever seen go in. I don't want to be the guy that stands in the way of the efficiency here, but please take the time to ask any questions that you have in the middle of the flow, all right? So I guess before I do anything here, I'm going to say that the conditions that made cogeneration interesting a decade ago-ish have only gotten more extreme, if you will, right? So the cost of energy has continued to rise, and it will continue to rise. There's more restrictions and constraints on emissions from different industrial plants. And those two things are continuing to rise, so we'll see in the project that those things still prove true. So I want to go over the project goals. I want to go over the technical overview. I want to talk a little bit about a federal investment tax credit, which is kind of an interesting little animal for a non-tax paying entity to be able to get a tax return like we do as normal taxpayers. We'll talk about the financial summary, and then we'll talk a little bit about schedule of the project. Go ahead, Jeremy. So as Jeremy talked about, and I will reiterate, there's really three primary objectives or goals in the project. One is to put that digester gas to productive use, which is currently being flared. The flare is not of the most modern technology, and it has a level of emissions, NOx we'll call it, that we can reduce by putting in a modern engine with gas treatment, which we selective catalytic reduction is the name of the technology. It's essentially a high-tech gas scrubbing system that cleans the emissions from the engine, and then obviously reduce the cost and the consumption of electricity and gas at the plant. In doing so, there's key considerations so that this solution fits nicely into the plant itself. So we've got one with regard to the physical location of the system. Where do we put it so that it doesn't interfere with plant operations? When we put a new animal into the zoo, if you will, does it unreasonably increase the workload or the complexity for the operations staff? So we need to make sure that that box is checked. We have authorities who are having jurisdiction, or call them regulators, that have to be satisfied in terms of the project, primarily Air Pollution Control District and the Coastal Commission. And then obviously we need to have financial viability of the equipment within the life of the expected life of the plant, right? So Jeremy gave you a quick update on what we've been doing for the last, well, significant part of the year. I just wanted to fill in what I'm calling the 90% update. So we chose as a team to relocate the system for a variety of reasons, and so that requires a significant amount of re-engineering. So we've relocated the system to a place near the flare in what are called drying beds 1 and 2. We've advanced the design of that system to above 50%. We have been out to the project community and updated all our numbers with regards to equipment availability, costs, et cetera. We have drilled down into the availability and the investment tax credit for this particular qualifying project. And we've, of course, updated all the utility costs from SoCalGas and from PG&E. So all of our numbers, all of our costs reflect the most current information as of, say, 30 days ago. This looked a lot better on a smaller screen.
It was provided to us in our packets, so I'm looking at the small screen, too.
Okay. Maybe it doesn't look any better to you. All this is just to try to give you a spatial awareness of where we originally had thought we could put the equipment, which is kind of right there by the primary digester. And then now, again, collectively as a team, we decided to put it in drying beds 1 and 2. The interesting things in the snippet below will show you that particular location kind of puts it in an intersecting position of all the pipes, lines, wires, et cetera, that are already being used to manage gas and hot water. So actually it ends up being a really good location from that perspective, and it doesn't bother Michael in the operation of the plant. So it's a good spot. All right, go ahead, Jeremy. Pardon the resolution of the drawing. So I will bring your attention to the green blob in the center of the screen. These pieces of equipment are specifically designed for each installation. So this is a representative picture of the system, but you'll notice that it is effectively a containerized solution. It's got an engine in it. It's got a generator in it. It's got the cooling system like you would have on a radiator on your car. One of the failure modes was excessive heat in the engine. The stacks are where we locate the exhaust and then all the cleaning systems. So everything that you see in that green box is the majority of the mover, the moving equipment, controls, brains, all that stuff. We'll move to the upper left-hand corner, and you'll see from the aerial view a couple of R2-D2 looking tanks and then a connected piece of equipment. That is where the pre-gas scrubbing happens. So when Jeremy mentioned siloxane, that's the primary catastrophic constituent of wastewater, of biogas, is the treating the siloxanes, H2S, and getting the water out of it. So that equipment that's bolted on the side is intended to clean up the gas before it gets to your engine. What I think is important about this is that because it's containerized and because it's pre-tested at the factory, we know it's going to work here from one manufacturer, and I don't want to say portable, it's reusable, right? So the stuff that's inside that orange box is stuff that could be unbolted and repurposed at another location if for some reason that became a necessity or an opportunity. Final thing I will say is we know that we're prone to, let's call them floods. So you'll notice in the cross section that we have accommodated a 48-inch flood wall there to be consistent with the rest of the improvements on the site. I think that's all I wanted to say. So it takes a village to do one of these projects, and there's a variety of specialists and regulators and other partners in the project. And this is really just to give you a list of all the things that need to be coordinated and have been coordinated in the rest of the information I'll present. And they include the trades, they include the implications of tariffs for imported equipment, interconnection, coastal commission. And then we have particularly a specialist on the investment tax credit advice that helps us make sure that we get the as much money for our clients as possible. Go ahead, Jeremy. Someone before the meeting expressed some interest in this to me, so I will be important about it. So in the the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, there were a variety of things instituted by the federal government. One of the things in the area of energy was to recognize non-taxpaying entities as eligible for an investment tax credit. So twist your head around and say, wait a minute, I don't submit a tax return because I don't pay taxes, but I'm going to get the equivalent of a refund check. Yes, that's essentially what it says. So it was enacted in 2022, and it took about 14 months for industry to get their head around that same fact and figure out what the rules were. And so we've now assisted several clients in getting millions of dollars of investment tax credits. Literally, the check shows up downtown, and they don't know what to do with a $1 million check when it shows up coming into the city or to the agency, right? So that was the key point, that you are now treated as a taxpayer, and as treated like a taxpayer, you put a tax return with qualifying expenses, and you get a check up to 30% of the qualifying costs of a project. The tax credit is paid directly to the entity, and it is paid in the next full tax cycle after the project is complete or received permission to operate. The next tax year. So you probably aren't asking this question, but part of that is to register as a taxpayer, and we coach you through that. You establish a tax year, right? And then once you've established a tax year, then you file a return based on your tax year. And the next, you know, whenever your return would typically be shipped to you on that tax year, that's when the checks come. And they're pretty good, about 45 days after approval. In the case of this project with this district under these rules, we're expecting over $2 million in investment tax credit for this project. Go ahead, Jeremy. So this is the representation of our assessment of your utility costs. I think during the period of time you went to 3CE, right? That happened in transition, right in the middle of what we're doing. But we've looked at all three of those bills, right? PG&E for the transmission distribution, 3CE for your commodity, SoCal Gas for natural gas. And what we've come to is the highlighted areas, the average year-over-year increase in your utilities is north of 7.5%. So remember that number, 7.5% year-over-year on average. Go ahead, Jeremy. So based on the performance of the system, based on the fact that it's creating the heat that you for the digesters that you otherwise buy natural gas for, you're going to reduce your natural gas consumption by 92% and your electric consumption by 88%. Hey, I didn't ask for the slide to be advanced yet. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, who's in control here? No, I'm just teasing, Amy. Please, please. Getting to the point. Right, so we're at, you know, 60, 70, 80% design on most of the plant, and our visibility at this point is that we can deliver the plant as described for between $9 and $9.5 million. The direct ITC or investment tax credit payment that I just sort of explained is estimated about $2.2 million. And that delivers a net project cost to the district of between $6.8 and $7.3 million. That's all in, design built, permitted, commissioned, training up the staff, and turning it over for staff operation. A couple of notes here. One is that if we receive direction to move forward, it's going to take us about 30 days to take what we have today to a final cost proposal, which would then come back to the board for review and consideration. Just a note here to remind me that about 80% of the project value is eligible for the investment tax credit. So some of the equipment is and some of the equipment isn't. And then obviously the estimated net price to the district is going to be contingent on the final cost. But that's the, those are the cost elements. And now we move Amy to the next slide, please. So here's the utility cost reductions. So on a gross basis, $290,000 in reduced or in energy savings. That's combined electricity and natural gas. These systems do have to be maintained. They're, you know, they're moving systems, and so that maintenance is a combination of a maintenance agreement, an ongoing maintenance agreement with the manufacturer of the equipment, and some fairly modest additions to Michael's team's daily and weekly routines as they go through their rounds. So we have to take into account that there is a cost of operating the equipment on an annual basis. And that today is, we haven't completely finalized which version, the silver, gold, or platinum they choose, but we're using $80,000 as the representation of the O&M costs. And so if you put those O&M costs against the utilities, we're north of $200,000 a year on savings on utilities alone. Key points, I mentioned 7.5% earlier. To be conservative, if you want to use that word, we're using 7% escalation on an annual basis in our current calculations. The O&M costs are being escalated at 3%. And just wanted to note that I'll show you a cash flow on the next page, but it already anticipates that this equipment needs to have a major service in year 7 and 14 of its life so that you maintain the longevity of the equipment. We can look at all the details here, but this is just a stack up of taking our utility savings. And I want to make a note that this is basically year 3 from today. It's going to take us that much time to get it all finished and primarily waiting for the utility, PG&E specifically, to grant us an interconnection agreement, which we know is going to take a lot of time. So we're using 3 years from the contract date for putting the system in service. So the table on the right of the screen is a representation of the world in, say, 3 years from now. So you've got utility savings, O&M costs escalated, and your net savings. So the savings from utility costs will pay for the equipment in less than 17 years.
Can I ask a question about that one before you go?
I got a funny look from Jeremy, like I said something wrong.
I have a.
I actually was going to say next slide. Yeah.
One of my questions, which I was kind of waiting for the right time, and maybe this is the right time to ask it, is you've mentioned that there's service intervals, roughly at the 1/3 mark, right? So mm-hmm. 7 and 14, and then going to 20, so 21. Is the assumption here based on this table that this equipment's going to be, its service life is 20 years, or what is the service life of the equipment?
It's a dangerous question. In
the industry is 20 years. I think the industry rating is 20 years.
Yeah.
Most districts would need longer, if you want to say that.
I was going to let you say that, but what we agree on is that typically public agencies run their equipment reliably for many, many years past what you would call the industry replacement rate, whether it's HVAC equipment, pumps. So it is going to be north of 20 years.
But 20 is the safe number? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying like 25 or 30 is probably the safe number. I would say that the industry standard would tell you 20 years.
Okay, thank you.
So I just wanted to kind of highlight back on the mental checklist of what our goals were to start. And our goals were to use the gas productively, which this project certainly does. our goals were to reduce the emissions at the plant, and I think the number is roughly 60% reduction in the NOx production on the same volume of gas from the flare that is today down to this modern clean burning engine, that we would save electricity and natural gas costs. And we know that's 80, north of 80 and 90% respectively. And that the equipment, the investment in the product would be repaid within, the life of the expectancy of the current plant. So it's been a lot of work. We like where it is today. So our ask here is whether or not you want to support us or direct us to proceed and take this to the final point, or we basically shake hands and, finish up the current contract that we have and go away friends. Questions?
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
all right, so I'll start on this side. Do you have questions?
Okay. I have some questions.
They may or may not be for you, so just stand there and look you.
I'll stand here and take the, right.
Okay, so the first question, did you say that this was a total rebuild, or were we saving pieces from the previous digester?
We're going to answer it the same way.
There's
nothing reusable from the previous system.
Got you. Okay. And then as far as, so you mentioned $9 million out the door, that's what our upfront cost is going to be? Or is that what's just estimated for what we're going to be saving, or we'll pay for it in those 17 years?
So right now, because we haven't brought it all the way home, which we intend to do in the next 30 or 45 days, we think the number's confidently going to fall between $9 and $9.5 million on the total cost of the project. Then you take the 2.2 and you get down to a net cost of whatever that is, 6.8, 7.3.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's it for now.
All right. Any questions?
Okay. So now how many of these have you done?
Three.
Okay. And how have they been doing? Everything's great.
Well, yeah, yeah. I would, if you know anybody in San Luis, that was the first one we did about 10 years ago ish. And it's going well.
Okay. I think it's fine. Yeah. Do I have any more questions?
Sure.
I got a bunch of questions, but I'm not sure if they're for you.
All right.
My first one, Jeremy, on page one, the misconfigured equipment and the 10-year-old motor that was misrepresented, what was the recourse on that?
So that study, those findings were accomplished in 2019 after the equipment had already been installed and fully paid for and depreciated. We initially tasked MKN with taking a look for a similar reason, like, hey, we have this equipment, it's never really done anything. What would we need to do to turn this thing on? It's a curiosity that that Michael and I shared. And they said, well, we need to take a look at it to see what went wrong with it so we can know, like, if we turn it back on, we don't repeat that stuff. And so they went through the course of going back into the past history and actually investigating files and what actually occurred during the rebuild. That system failed, and the district actually paid to rebuild the entire engine one time. And then immediately when they turned it back on, it didn't fail again, but certain levels and stuff were being exceeded in a way that it was going to lead to failure, so it was idled again and never really produced any meaningful energy to the plant. So that's something that would be misleading. It's recent history. It would be misleading to not be candid with the board and the public about that failure. Now, I do want to say I have confidence in this team. I have confidence in Michael and staff to operate it, and I have confidence in myself to deliver this project. And we will be able to operate it and have substantial uptime And we will not repeat those similar failures that we had in the past. And so that's not that's not a challenge or a concern that I think that we'll overcome those challenges. Where
I'm not sure you're answering my question.
So let me get back. Okay, I do understand. I'm missing a portion of your question. There was no recourse. There was no investigation. There was no follow-up to who the engineers were that designed the system and why there was a 10-year-old engine procured. It was all let go, and nothing was pursued.
Okay, thank you. And then regarding the coastal development permit, I'm very surprised we don't have public here talking about this right now. Can you just discuss a little bit about, I'm anticipating that we're going to get some flack for this.
Yeah, and I was certainly prepared to discuss those concerns and those issues.
Let's
and
pretend we got public comment on that, and you can just go ahead.
Right. So we're currently operating under a coastal development permit that we received in 2017 for the construction and operation of the redundancy project. And that coastal development permit has language in it that specifically says the district shall avoid further development of the site that's not essential for operations of the plant. And so it's definitely a stretch to say that this is essential for the operation of the plant. So obviously we can continue to buy natural gas and we can continue to buy electricity from the public utilities. So where we're at with Coastal is we've met with our Coastal planner staff, and what they're doing is they're actually reviewing the permit in this project for conformity, basically. So they're saying, does this project fall into those conditions that I kind of just described? And that's the first step. They're going to look at whether it conforms, and they're going to let us know. But they've acknowledged the merit in the project. They've acknowledged that the whole purpose of what they're doing is all about climate change, and this is a project that directly combats climate change. It's a carbon neutral source of energy. It's gas that's already being wasted. And so there's more steps. Another step would be a waiver by the executive director, and then there could be, if they wanted substantially more information about the project, we could potentially have to pursue an amendment to the permit to pursue. And I will say, ultimately, this could be a dead end, and the coastal conditions could put a stop to the project. And the intent would be to fully know that before we appropriate more funds to the project.
So that leads to my next question. Thank you for the tea. I was hoping that was how you were going to do that. Is there's a statement at the end of the considerations for the board about substantial expenses for relocation. So let's just pretend that we have a 20-year horizon on this, and we have this rolling and up to speed in 2029, so that would be 2049, so there would be a relatively high chance, if it lasts as long as we're being told it's going to last, that it is going to have to be relocated. So when it says substantial expense, what does that mean? I need to know what substantial means.
I don't think there's been effort on the engineering side to approximate that number. And it would, there's a couple reasons why it might not be worth pursuing, because candidly,
pursuing relocation.
Not all wastewater treatment processes produce biogas. So without the process of plant treatment cycle being fully vetted, so at some point we're going to decide to design a new plant. And one of the things we'll have to consider is what the process is and what makes sense for the treatment. But with where energy costs are going and where the industry is going with energy costs, being able to control your energy independence from these utilities and being able to take over 90% of your energy needs is going to be a lasting value, right? There's security in that because regardless of where prices go, the industry knows that the strain on the California grid is going to be continued into the foreseeable future. We have large amounts of EVs entering the market, and we have large amounts of AI data centers that are consuming large amounts of electricity. Okay. Now, the prolonged increases on PG&E's side, on the residential side, might not be able to be sustainable. Something will have to stop at some point because people won't be able to afford it. But on the industrial electricity rates, that's where you could see kind of them making up ground when they have to stop increasing residential rates. You'll see a shift to higher prices on, because we pay relatively low rates compared to residential customers, and what you'll see is a shift as there's been too much pressure. So that's the issue, and that's precisely the guidance that I'm looking for the board tonight and why it's been presented in such a way with options, because it's something that I'm tasked with studying and understanding of when we're going to relocate. I know there's public pressure on relocating on different timelines, and so I want to, you know, share that knowledge and that description with the board and the people that are responsible for making these decisions, and so we can all say we did it together.
So on that same note, let's assume that we are tasked with moving. Are you reasonably confident that this will be paid off at the time that we could be asked to move the plant?
In my staff report, I think I used the phrase that we've identified one unmitigated risk, and that is precisely the risk. If we're moving by year 13 or something, we could be making payments on a system that we're no longer operating, and that's precisely the risk that we're talking about, and that's not known, but it's also foreseeable.
Is that something that we're going to get some guidance when we get commentary from the Coastal Commission?
Yeah. So the meeting with the planner, he alluded to, based on all the information that's been collected so far, it definitely seems like you'll make it to the end of the 2047 portion of the permit. But things can, you know, there's a lot of pressure in forecasting this, right? None of us control the weather and what's going to happen with Lopez and releases and the AG Creek channel and the levee system that's behind the plant. And there'll be some improvements, and there'll be some improvements that aren't able to happen on those type of flood mitigation type projects.
Thank you. And finally, I'm just underlining this as you're for sure 100%. The last statement on the funding is there's no cash outlay from the district, and debt service payments would be entirely covered by the cost savings generated from the project.
So that's a great question, that's all a true statement. But what I would want to suggest is that we should come back and talk about that as a group, because currently the district is, because of our good financial performance during the construction of the redundancy project, we are cash heavy now, and so we'd have an opportunity whether to partially upfront fund some of this and not make debt service type payments. But that is a true statement that we would be, our reduction in what we give PG&E every year would be more than enough to pay for the debt of taking this on. I think many people in the community might have put solar on their house, and you realize when you put solar on, all of a sudden your payment for solar is less than what you were paying PG&E, and it's a similar type of scenario.
Thank you. So that's the rest of my questions. See, I didn't think that was going to be for you. Thank you.
I just have one more question.
Yes. Don't forget your mic.
The drying beds. So,
yes.
So you can put it in there in one of the. It's not going to interfere with the drying beds.
Yeah, no, it's going to. I don't know. Excuse me. Yes, it'll take over two of our sludge drying beds. One thing that we found as during operation during the redundancy project, we had beds 1, 2, and 3 taken by the contractor that was on site building the redundancy project, and found that losing those three beds, we were still able to maintain operation of our dewatering using the seven other beds that we still had on site, six other beds, and then also our centrifuge unit. We've increased the usage of our centrifuge because we're producing more solids, and so we have to remove more. So we've decreased the usage of our sludge beds, so losing those two sludge beds isn't a hindrance to operations.
Okay. All right.
All right.
I have one more. I'm so
yes,
sorry.
Ma'am.
I just want to clarify just one more time. So let's say, like, we do direct staff to move it forward, and the Coastal Commission says, no, that's not allowed. It's just dead. The project is dead. Is that correct?
I would be seeking more board direction whether to pursue any type of appeal. But, I think at that point, if Coastal is going to oppose the installation based on its prior guidance, I think largely that we would have to it would be wise to acquiesce.
Okay, thank you. All right,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we will go ahead and open up public comment.
Actually, if something a little bit out of order, I've got another slide here.
Oh, yes.
Just
sorry.
And it's on because we received it yesterday, so it's hot off the press. I did want to share that one of the regulators that's involved is the Air Pollution Control Board. I realize that you can't necessarily read all this, but this is actually a letter of support. The team met about a week ago, and I wondered if we could get a letter of support from Air Pollution Control District. And immediately after the meeting, Michael got on the phone and reached out to him, reminded them what we were working on, and they said, yeah, that matches our mission. Like we want to, reuse this energy and get these emissions down, and claim the benefit of the catalytic converter on the engine. So what you're seeing here is a letter of support for the project. So part of why I'm saying this is one of the permits we'll have to get, and so we can be confident that this permit will be readily available for us to operate that new cogeneration system.
Maybe next time we could get that as a supplemental so that we could have seen that before the meeting?
Yes, noted.
Thank you. All right, public comment was already opened, and seeing nobody coming forward, we'll close public comment, and why don't we just take comments? I think we're all going to have comments, I'm going to guess. Linda, do you have comments for us?
Yeah, I mean,
don't forget your mic.
I think this is just wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. The fiscal considerations, the saving the money and all that, and so I'm all for it. And seeing the APCD, I figured they would think it was okay because of the emissions. It'd be stopping all, so I'm glad to see that. And I just think it's a great idea. I think I'm really glad to see it moving forward, and hope the Coastal Commission will give their blessing.
Okay. I will say I just off, my initial reaction to this, I mean, I am supportive of it because of the cost and exactly what Board Member Austin just said, but I'm, of course, concerned about the cost and the fact that we might be moving. So I would love to see what the Coastal Commission says and what any further guidance that we get on the relocation of the plant, if that's happening, if it's what we might, that uncertainty, that's what's making me not say, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. So those are just my two points of uncertainty there, or hesitation rather. So I'd like to hear more comments though, but yeah.
For me, in the staff report, it specifically says there are several portions of the project that would suggest implementation is the obvious choice. The one mitigating factor is what you said about the potential that we could move prior to 17 years. I don't think that's going, that would really be prior to 20 years from now because of the 3-year head start or implementation part. I'm relatively confident knowing how long the redundancy project took that even if we were tasked to move, it's not gonna happen within 20 years, though we might be be in that process, but I don't know that we would get there. So I was trying to identify just how much of a risk that is, and I think it's relatively minimal given that not only is this a savings potentially, but it's just the right thing to do. So I had originally thought when we were discussing this 2-3 years ago that this was going to be DOA because of the cost of it. So I was really surprised when we got this staff report that it seems not only doable but kind of obvious. So I guess I'm just very excited that it is kind of coming forward in a way that I didn't expect based on my prior service. So thank you for that. So with that, would someone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we move forward with the proposal from Southland.
There's the recommendations there.
What is the recommendation? Well, I move forward with staff recommendation on this.
I will second that motion to direct the district administrator to advance the project for final plans.
Yeah. All right. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Director Karen Ray Russom?
Yes.
Director Cassie D?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Make sure you spend your tax money here in Rio Grande. You do not want to go to these other
places. Park River Beach? Hold on a second. Whoa. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. You could spread the love and do all of them, so.
Yes, sir. Yeah, very well done. Very well done. Okay. We look forward to seeing what Coastal Commission says and hope to see you back here soon. All right, item 6D is authorization to reclassify the bookkeeper secretary position to business and accounting analyst and adopt a salary range. Mr. Gent.
Good evening, board. So yes, the item before you is an authorization to reclassify the bookkeeper secretary position to business and accounting analyst and adopt a salary range. So some background and discussion. The bookkeeper secretary position was originally established to provide basic bookkeeping, clerical, and administrative support to the district. Over time, these duties of the position have expanded significantly in response to increased regulatory requirements, financial complexity, reporting obligations, and expanded human resource needs and operational demands placed on the district. The position now performs professional level accounting, financial analysis, audit coordination, compliance reporting, human resources, and administrative functions that exceed the scope of a clerical or bookkeeping classification. The proposed reclassification is intended to align the position, title, and classification with the work currently being performed. So some of the justification is there's been an expanded scope and complexity of the position. It requires a higher level of professional judgment, a higher level of accountability, has to comply with risk management and the different stuff aligned with workers' compensation in the risk management realm. It aligns with the continued size and operation of the district and provides operational continuity. So the salary justification, the proposed business and accounting analyst classification reflects a professional non-supervisory position responsible for the district's financial reporting, compliance, and analytical functions. The proposed range also internally aligned with the district's existing professional classifications and does not create any compression or inequity. That's a bargaining term where you're compressing certain classifications by this, and we don't create that with that. Based on review of comparable California special districts, the scope and complexity of the duties currently performed, a reasonable and fiscally responsible salary range for the position is from $77,000 to $98,000 annually. Additionally, a review of comparable accounting and analyst level positions in San Luis Obispo County and immediately adjacent public agencies, including Oceano, CSD, nearby cities in the county, and a neighboring sanitation district, it indicates that salary ranges that support a business and accounting analyst range of the $77,000 to $98,000. And so the table below is illustrates the current bookkeeper position and the proposed range for the business and accounting analyst. And a lot of how this structure is similar to the other agencies in the district as well. So it's been done in conjunction with looking at the structures of Arroyo Grande, Oceano, and Grover Beach. And it would also be consistent with some of the roles and responsibilities shared at those agencies. And so with that, it concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Let's see if there are questions. Questions? Yeah. Questions? I got lots of questions.
Sure.
So I have to admit, I should have told you this before the meeting. Did not have a chance. Under fiscal impact, I find that section not informative enough. That's very hard to see what the actual fiscal impact is going to be. I expect in the fiscal impact part that I'm going to see numbers there. And it just says you might make a new decision. So my question is, it doesn't say anywhere in the report how much more we're going to be spending. And it doesn't say in the report, typically when we're doing this at the cities, we're going to see a wage analysis and we'll see some kind of chart. And you've listed in narrative form, we looked at these other agencies, but there's no numbers there. There's nothing that helps us understand where these numbers are coming from. So do you have anything that you can share with us that gives us that?
Certainly. I haven't made preparations to share that tonight, but yes, I can absolutely share those tables. I didn't want, because our communities are so small, it felt like I was listing immediate peers' salaries at the paired agencies. And so that's why I withheld that information from the staff report. But it's very valid. I can.
Aren't those public anyway?
They're totally public, and you can see those all online. But it will look like a comparison of other business analysts throughout the region, which I guess is appropriate and fair in this instance. So yes, I'm happy to prepare that and bring it back for further consideration of the board if you want to see that type of information and justification.
I will wait for comments
Okay. Before
I say that, but I think you're going to know what my comment is. Okay, so that my questions are all related around that because I don't have enough information right now. So I'm going to go ahead and open up public comment. Seeing no invisible people coming up, we'll close public comment. And so if I would, I'll take chair's prerogative and go first and just say I would prefer, and I think I would prefer for the public to see those numbers and have us be able to see where those numbers come from and exactly what the budget impact is going to be before we actually make the decision. And Amy, I want to make sure that you understand this is not because I don't support you. I totally support you. I just feel like we need more information to make the proper decision.
Understood.
Okay. So that I may get outvoted, however, so let's give others a chance to speak.
I actually have a question. Is it time sensitive? Like, does this need to happen right now, or can we bring it back?
We certainly can bring it back. This is a position that hasn't been adjusted for a while. Most of the other positions are now represented positions, and so they get addressed more frequently and get more attention. But no, it's not. It could certainly wait till next month and be implemented.
Yeah.
Perhaps we could consider going retroactive. If we make that decision, we can go retroactive to what when it would have been implemented if we'd taken it a month sooner. That's a possibility too, because it's not my intention to delay. It's my intention to be really transparent about how we're spending money and making sure that the amount that's being suggested here is what the board agrees is the correct interpretation of the comparison. And I say that because when we get wage comparisons, and we're doing that at the city, there is an approach to how you interpret those numbers. Do you take the middle? Do you take the median? Do you take the average? Do you want to be on top? And that's a policy decision that we need to make. So that's where my brain is when I say I want that to come back. I want the rationale for how you arrived at this number in addition to the actual table.
It's totally appropriate. And yes, I'll bring that back to your board.
All right, great. Thank you very much. So then I guess I will move that we continue this to a date certain, which is the first meeting of April.
Correct, April Fool's Day.
Okay.
Oh, I will second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And motion carries 3-0. Okay, there you go. That one's not an ordinance or anything. All right, item 6E, bylaw revisions, technical update.
Madam Chair and ladies of the board, welcome to the most exciting item on the agenda tonight. My pleasure to recommend to you that you update your bylaws to specify that your meetings are held the first Wednesday of the month in such locations as may be designated by you all. That was just information that somehow was missing from the bylaws, and it's a housekeeping item. Thank you.
I have a lot of questions. I'm totally kidding. I don't have any.
I do have one question. Okay. I didn't see a redacted version with like a line out. What did it say before?
It said nothing before.
It just said on the first of each calendar month?
No, yes. Kidding.
And we never caught that in all these years?
Well, that I went back and looked, and it occurred during the February 2025 update of the by. It said Wednesday in previous versions of the bylaws, but when we updated it 12 months ago and recorded that document, somehow we deleted the word. But I'm speaking about Amy and I. Somehow we deleted that word, or it could have been Wendy even, or Keith, somebody. on this item, but no, we don't know how it disappeared, but we caught it and it's back now.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and open up public comment, and seeing no one, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Again, this is not an ordinance. So would someone like to make a motion?
Move to approve.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? And the motion carries 3-0. All right, item 6E. No, 6F, the consideration of adoption of resolution number 2026-489, approving the 2025 San Luis Obispo County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan. I'm so excited that I didn't have to read this because it was on my AG agenda last week, so.
Good evening, ladies of the board, Michael Jones, plant superintendent. The item before you is to consider and adopt resolution number 2026-469, approving the 2025 San Luis Obispo County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan. Staff's recommendation is that you adopt resolution 2026-469, approving the 2025 San Luis Obispo County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan. Some background and discussion. At the August 5th, 2020 Board of Directors meeting, the board adopted resolution 2020-417, which adopted the 2020 San Luis Obispo County MJHMP. This identifies natural and man-made hazards that may impact the district. It also assesses the vulnerability and risks posed by those hazards, develops strategies for mitigating those hazards, presents future maintenance procedures for the plan, and documents the planning process. With the expiration of the previous plan, the MJHMP being presented to the board for consideration underwent a comprehensive update in 2025. Updates to the hazardous mitigation plan have been developed to meet the requirements of the Federal Disaster Mitigation Act of 2000. The act requires state and local government to develop HMPs to maintain their eligibility for certain federal disaster assistance and hazard mitigation funding programs. The updated process has been completed, and the plan is now ready for adoption. Attached to the staff report for quick reference is the district's local hazard mitigation plan, Annex U. The full MJHMP can be viewed at the county's website, and I provided the hyperlink in the board staff report. Excuse me. Adoption of the MJHMP will bring the district into compliance with FEMA requirements and make the district eligible for certain categories of federal hazard mitigation funding over the next 5 years. The San Luis Obispo County HMP has been approved by FEMA, and the county has received FEMA approval pending adoption by the government bodies of participating jurisdictions. It is recommended that the Board of Directors adopt the resolution. Some fiscal consideration. The total cost of the project was $245,000. $30, 75% of which was funded by a hazard mitigation grant program, with the remaining 25% local match being provided by the participating jurisdictions, with the percentage share based on a per capita formula. The district share is $1,250. Additionally, significant potentially positive fiscal impacts exist as a hazard mitigation plan is a prerequisite to receiving certain disaster reimbursement funds and grants. And with that, that concludes my report, and I'm able to answer any questions the board may have.
Will we ever have a disaster that requires us to exercise that? Say no.
No.
Okay. Any questions? All right, we'll open up public comment, and seeing no one here, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board.
I move that we adopt the resolution number 2026.
Don't forget your mic.
I move to adopt the resolution 2026-469 and approve the 2025 San Luis Obispo County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan.
I'll second.
Wouldn't it be ironic if we all said yes at our jurisdictions and said no here?
That would be crazy, right?
Yeah. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Director Karen Ray Ressam?
Yes.
Director Cassie D?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right, item 6G. This is the District Administrator and Plant Operations Report.
I'll try to be fast. So this has been a long meeting for us, at least, right? No. What are we up to, like 40 minutes or something? District Administrators and Plant Operations Report. So on the redundancy project, a couple minor items. District has completed working with the vendor. We've been talking about the rotary drum thickeners, some operational issues we've been keeping you updated on. All of those have been resolved. The system's been running with substantial uptime and no longer a burden on staff. All other new equipment is fully operational, and there are no notable issues with any of the new plant equipment. We gave a full update on the cogeneration project earlier this evening as item 6C. And then some miscellaneous items. District staff assisted and monitored Sousa construction in the city of Grover Beach during an overnight 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. Sewer connection to a newly installed SSLOCSD access structure, or formerly known as a manhole, on Manhattan Avenue. District staff continue to coordinate and communicate with City of Grover's staff regarding ongoing city sewer improvements. Grover's been kind of going through a little bit of a boom, and so there's quite a bit of development happening down closer to the coastal end of Grand Avenue. So the district continues to accommodate an Army Corps of Engineers research effort studying the effects of liquefaction during an earthquake. Army Corps engineer staff and researchers have been utilizing the northeast parking area at our facility to conduct soils analysis and testing to further the understanding of earthquake science. Staff is currently working with Slo County Airports and the FAA to correct a recent FAA boundary error that incorrectly added the entire sanitation district 10-acre parcel to the Oceano Airport. And staff believes that the error is in the process of being corrected already, and we'll update the board when it's corrected. I will note that it does pose an issue for us. If we're operating a crane on site, we have to go through a process of showing where our crane's going to be located on our site. And now if we go in and attempt to use that online system with the FAA, they're like, oh, no, this has got to go through airport review because you're working on airport property. And it's like, stop saying that. Like, this is our property. But and that came to light. It's recent. We didn't have that issue going through the construction of the redundancy project, and it's just a GIS error on the FAA's side. And with that, it concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Good evening again. Michael Jones, plant superintendent, presenting the plant operations report. During the reporting period of January to February 2026.
Excuse me. You took away my most important part of this meeting that I look forward to every month. Could you start again for me?
Okay. Good evening, ladies of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent, presenting the plant operations report. During the reporting period of January to February 2026, I put in there 2025, that's a correction. It's January to February 2026. The district had no violations of its NPDES permit. All data presented in the tables below are well within permit limitations. Operations staff completed a multitude of operations and maintenance tasks and work orders. Staff did participate in some training. We participated in training on first aid, CPR, and AEDs. We did have a few call-outs on January 1st and February 15th for a SCADA communications failure. We're not exactly sure on what the issue is. Staff is currently investigating the issue with our SCADA integrator, and we'll be able to provide more information on that at a later date. We had a call out for our primary sludge pump fault, and that's kind of a result of the SCADA communications failure. Again, staff is investigating that with our integrator. February 17th, we had an RDT1 device failure. Operation staff found condensation in RDT control panel, which caused the HMI panel to fail. RDT1 has been shut down until the HMI panel can be replaced. Expected delivery of replacement parts is due in mid-March. February 18th, we had an intrusion alarm. Operation staff responded and inspected the facility. The intrusion door ajar alarm was due to heavy winds during a storm event, so it's, nobody was trying to break into the facility. Moving on, I have some staff photos. In this first photo, I have operators Mario De Leon and Everardo Vargas performing some tree maintenance. In this next photo, I have senior operator Chris Rigoni and operations supervisor Mike Arias performing the WAS pump mechanical seal replacement. In this next photo, I have operators Justin Music and Mario De Leon performing the installation of a access structure level monitor installation. And with that, that concludes my report, and I'm able to answer any questions the board may have.
You know, it's funny. We have a word for that in AG, too, and I can't, it's not access structure. I'm trying to remember what the word is, but everybody's trying to find the right word, and the right word is manhole, of course. But nobody wants to say that. We have one, too, and I can't remember what it is. I have one question, and it's legitimately a question. Which of our on-call people responded to the 5:30 a.m. alarm on January 1st?
I believe that was operator Chris Rigoni, if I'm not
mistaken.
Would
you please give Mr. Rigoni a special high five from the chair for responding to the exceptionally cruel alarm after New Year's Eve? And I appreciate his work.
Will do.
Yeah. I thought it was more funny that the two call-outs were January 1st and February 15th. The day after Valentine's Day. Yeah. So just I just thought that was really interesting. I caught that, so thank you for bringing it.
Yeah.
It's just
interesting.
All right. There is nothing for us to do but receive and file on that. So getting back to my agenda. Excuse me. That's it. That takes us to our board member communications. Does anyone have communications this month? All right, then we are at number 8, adjournment for the longest meeting in like 2 years, which was roughly an hour and 15 minutes. Yeah. Oh my God. So still, good job. That was a lot of good work, everybody. We'll see you next month.